You're listening to Star Wars Hangout.
The best Star Wars Hangout in the galaxy. Hey, Star Wars fans, welcome back to Star Wars Hangout. I'm Ez.
And I am Lottie.
And friends, we are back with The Mandalorian Season 3, Episode 4, Chapter 20, The Foundling. See, I got all those titles in there that time. I had to, you know, make sure there's so many titles. Mm-hmm. It's like Chapter 20, but it's Episode 4 of Season 3, The Foundling.
Oh, so well, that's crazy. I never thought about that. Yeah.
We got to get them. Yeah, it's all one thing. I mean, right, so they're kind of keeping track of the total number of episodes that we've had this whole time. But yeah, this is The Foundling, and we are... Let's just say that this episode blew me away. Do you remember? I was like, what? I mean, when you know who shows up, we're not going to say yet. This is, by the way, spoiler episode. But the non-spoiler review of this is, it's freaking awesome.
It is pretty cool. There's a couple of scenes that are very, very special, memorable.
Yeah. Yes.
Yes.
Yes. And it's just growing. I mean, it is just growing and growing, and it just feels more interconnected. Things are starting to make more sense.
Yeah.
Actually, that's the big one, because there's been so much mystery. You do have to kind of wrap up some of those questions that we've had, but then there's also more questions, which is great. So all that to say, we loved the episode 4, chapter 20, The Foundling. Fantastic. I mean,
yeah, it's truly The Mandalorian. It's a very Mandalorian episode.
yes, it is. Right. Because that last episode, so chapter 3, chapter 19, episode 3, was very different. We went back to Coruscant, yeah. Elia Kane. We had thanks again to Michaela for popping on that episode. Really cool to talk with her, and she's a big Star Wars fan.
Oh, that was so really fun listening to you guys.
Really good thoughts. Our Thrawn theory was taking some it was taken off a little bit, so I enjoyed it. But okay, into the spoilers here. So essentially, this episode starts off with sort of a trials thing, like Mandalorian trials. They're all fighting. Grogu has his moment where he's sort of stepping maybe from foundling to apprentice. We're not sure what's happening there. And then one of the foundlings is taken, right? So a war party is mustered. They have to go get the foundling. Meanwhile, the armorer says, Grogu, come this way. And into the forge, right? Mm-hmm. They go. And we get an epic flashback to Order 66 and who rescued Grogu. Master Beck. Master Kelleran Beck is there to rescue Grogu. It was wild. It was awesome. So we'll talk more about that. And then we come back to this secret covert of Mandalorians, where they go on the war party and they rescue this foundling that happens to be Paz Vizsla's son, Ragnar.
Yeah.
Which was crazy.
Which we find out later in the episode.
Yeah.
He doesn't right away reveal that he is his son.
We must save the child.
Yeah.
The child is in danger.
The foundling. The child.
Yeah. First he says the child. It will kill the child. We must do something. Right. Yeah. And then behind, you know, did you just see? I can almost imagine like we're over. He walks over behind the rocks and he's just sobbing. It's like, oh my gosh, my son. But they can't. They don't like show a lot of emotion. And we're trying to figure out really what it is about these Mandalorians. These warlike sort of these warriors. Warrior culture. So. Let's just dive in here, though. What did you think? What were some of your initial thoughts, I guess, as we're into the spoiler discussion about Grogu in his fight? He takes on Ragnar at the beginning, and he basically, Daddy Din is like, it is time
for you. Time's over.
Blade time is over. You need to step up. This is the only part that I think is a little... I don't know what they're going to do. I don't know how, if they're going to eventually advance the Grogu, like what Grogu can do. I mean, he's definitely doing flips and stuff now, which is really cool. So I wasn't expecting that. But what did you think about that fight sequence, I guess? I mean, it's darts. Bring out the ancient darts.
That was fine. I just felt like it was so random that Din was like, okay, now we need to do something here. And I mean, it's okay to not lose his training out of sight, like, you know, to not lose everything he learned from Luke. That's fine, because he's stepped up when Din was in danger and he had to go get Bo-Katan on his own. He's learning so much every day
from
Din, And it's okay to double down on that and train him a little bit more. But it just felt like, okay, here you go, fight. No introduction.
Yeah.
Grogu has no clue what kind of weapons the Mandalorians use. And normally Din was explaining a lot of stuff to him on the way, like about the star system and the flying and all that stuff. And then he needs to know his way around. And this time it was just like, here you go.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it was pretty crazy. I mean, I felt like we get right into it. And I think Bo-Katan at one point says that, like, this is, her father was the same way or something, you know. And so, also, I just want to point out that they're launching a ton of rockets and blaster fire into this pond, this lake that they're out there. Oh, like, true. Oh, shoot. Save your ammunition, right? And then I also saw they were fighting with spears behind. You know, like back in the background, you see a lot of fighting going on and training, and they're training with a spear, like a staff or whatever.
Okay.
Thought that was kind of cool because that's really what Din uses in this, at the end of season two. Mm-hmm. So I have didn't really think of them as using a staff to fight as much, but they are. And maybe that's just because of him. I'm not really sure, but yeah, pretty cool. Pretty interesting fight, I guess. It's just like, you know, it's paintball. It's just the darts. Clip him on there, and then he takes two shots to the chest, and then he gets a little pump talk from his dad, and he's like, "Hey, come on, I know you can do better."
Yeah.
And then boom, pops up, does a double back, not just like I'm gonna flip to one side, but as soon as he lands, flips back again.
Right.
Now that was pretty epic, and then boom, 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 three shots. So, I mean, why didn't the other kid just fire three shots?
I know, that's what I was thinking the whole time.
Would have been over.
Yeah.
Yeah, it felt like a video game, too. He sets him down. He's like, next challenger.
Yeah.
And then and they're just ready. And there's a judge, you know, who's scoring points, and they're training for sure. It's cool. I mean, it's interesting, you know?
They're a very interesting group of people, definitely. Like, they have their own customs. Something Bo-Katan is not even used to. But they're still all Mandalorians. It's kind of cool. Yeah. But you do feel like they're really off grid. They're their own group, and they're just. I don't. How long have they been there?
We don't really know. That's a great question. I mean, it to me is. I've been struggling to understand like why. So there was a group of them, and during season one, they get their secret location is exposed, so they have to relocate it. This is the way. They relocate the covert here, I'm guessing, but then there's this weird like Book of Boba Fett moment where there's like a transition, they're on some space station and he shows up there and fights Vizsla with the Darksaber.
Yeah.
But then now we're back here to this desert sort of planet. I don't even really know if we don't, it's a secret location.
It is. Yeah.
That's all they say. They won't really say anything else. I did think it was kind of funny. You see all the younglings in this, and I felt like it was for the Mandalorian mercs who like do a lot of the costuming for Mandalorians. Mm-hmm. I felt like it was like, you know, bring your kid to work day or something, and they all just like brought their kids in, and they're back
that's so cool.
Messing around because...
I mean, would be awesome.
Right? There's just a bunch of activities that are happening. They've got some of them are trying to scale up the side of the mountain, and then some of them are trying to like work with like it looks like a fire pit, and some are watching. It's just lots of activities going on. So today was clearly like a training day. So they're out there just training away. And you see some more advanced combat happening, but then you see some younger individuals just standing around. So I don't know. It's interesting. There was a cool part here too where Din says to Paz's son, he says, one does not speak unless one knows.
Yeah.
Right? This is the way. And that's actually so when...
I like that.
Maybe when I've got like a youngster mouthing off at school or something and they're getting a little, you know, talking back. One does not speak unless one knows, okay?
Oh, can you drop that on someone who you like? You know they like Star Wars. And they would understand.
That would be good humor, right? Yeah. Yeah, it's like, well, hold on, you know. Yeah, just kind of funny. It's funny because then there was like the Quill line where he's like, I have spoken, right? So, okay, Quill spoke because he knew, apparently. So since he knows, he was allowed to speak, and
he did know.
I have spoken.
I mean, I would say a lot of teenagers, they would say of themselves, they know.
Oh, they would. And that's what this kid said, right? He was just like, I know. So what's up? And then clearly, and then Den's like, well, maybe this lesson is for you. So they just go back and forth. Yeah, what?
Raptor. Yeah. I probably took me like 6 minutes, 7 minutes to look up what the beast was that was flying away with.
The raptor?
Ragnar. Yeah.
Yeah.
The raptor. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, that thing is crazy. It just comes over the... So, I mean, he is sort of contemplating his loss to Grogu. Mm-hmm. This thing swoops in there and just, boom, picks
and
him up.
And you get the idea that this is not the first time this happened. They're like, yeah, oh, they've it always lost, gets away.
Yeah. Now, it is one of those things where out in the wild, it's like, okay, yeah, you see... I'm trying to think, like... If a lion is out there looking for a meal and it's hard to chase down the other mm-hmm. gazelle, but you see some younglings there.
Yep.
He's going to take out the younglings. Sorry. Yep. But I mean, it's their job to kind of protect him. Did you see that? It was like a viral TikTok video where it was a couple porcupines or whatever protecting their two little porcupines. Mommy and daddy porcupine were like, they had the other two ones in the middle and this, oh my gosh, I don't know what it was. It was a big cat though. It was a big like... lion or something. I don't know what it was exactly, but it was trying to get to their little babies and they had them surrounded. Aww. And the porcupines, they were able to like,
I mean, they're,
yeah,
they have some really sharp,
yeah, what do you call quills them? Or yeah. Whatever. Yeah. And it did a great job. It actually was able to spines, you know, yeah, get them off. But anyway, no one has the wherewithal to get in a ship. Well, I guess they don't have ships.
No. Yeah.
Or something. They have one big ship, maybe like a freighter somewhere that's hidden.
Yep.
Right? Because we don't know. We don't see any ships there. We don't know how they got there. We don't know where that's... I'm sure there is one, but...
Mm-hmm. It probably like, would have taken too long to start that. It maybe is not as agile as Bo-Katan's ship. Yeah.
Yeah, you've also got the N1, so that's the Naboo fighter that Din has, so it's parked somewhere as well. But they all take off in jetpacks, and they cannot keep pace with it. They can't keep pace, and they run out of fuel, but then she goes on ahead and figures out where it's at. So
yep.
thanks to her, you know, we actually know. We know where that thing is at. But then we get... So that's sort of like part one. And it's this whole season has done this quite a bit where there's a beginning, sort of like 1/4 of the episode we're going to show you this way. And then 2/4 we're going to show you this way. And then the last 1/4 we're going to come back to this planet. It's been kind of a different with like the last two episodes have been like that because we had this whole bit with Coruscant and Elia Kane and Dr. Pershing in the middle, surrounded by the covert here in the beginning and then at the end. So same thing here, we have the beginning, the setup, the training, we have the taking of the foundling, and then we have our foundling Grogu going into with the armorer and learning about what it means to be a Mandalorian, learning how the Forge shapes them and may bring up some... It brings up some trauma for him.
Yep.
He actually has a flashback then to Order 66. And this was awesome. This was flat out awesome. When Master Beck just... So he sees the door. He sees these other Jedi are protecting Grogu. And
yes,
they're
and
trying.
There's probably like 4 or 5 of them. I gotta look back. And I was like, "What? They are all protecting Grogu. Grogu seems to be one of the more important kids.
Uh-huh.
That are, I mean.
How important is he?
Yeah, why is he isolated from other kids?
Yeah, why weren't there other younglings around him? Was it just the circumstance that when the training broke out, he was with these other 4 Jedi?
Mm-hmm.
And they're trying to get him, because they're trying to get him to Kelleran. And it feels like Kelleran was in charge of getting younglings to safety. It felt like when this all broke out, their mission was protect the younglings.
Yeah.
You know, like protect them, get them to Kelleran. Maybe he had done a couple runs prior to this and he had gotten a couple younglings out. That's what I'm imagining. And then because the fighting has broken out, they're trying to move from a secure location, because if they just sit there, they're sitting ducks, right? I mean, they're at the Capitol. They're surrounded by clone troopers. So there's this operation that's been set up and Beck has a way to get them out. That's what I felt like. And I'm not sure, but it was, Ahmad Best is awesome. He's back in this. He plays Jar Jar Binks. I explained all of this to Lottie and sort of made the connection. So to see him, I had no clue that this was going to happen. Yeah. I knew they brought him in as a Jedi for like some Jedi trials or training or whatever it was, some show that they had kind of created that I've not seen yet. I heard about it and I was like, awesome.
Yeah.
So glad he's still in Star Wars and he's doing some, and then boom, he's in The Mandalorian.
Yeah.
This is not just some game show that they're doing. No, this is real. It was just like, it was on another level. And then, so the one Jedi, they're like defending Grogu and she like falls, like it takes a blaster shot and she falls into the elevator with him and he picks up that lightsaber.
Yep.
And it's just reassures Grogu the whole nine yards. I was blown away. And it, you saw my reaction.
Yeah.
Genuinely was sort of like, what? Because I knew exactly who he was. I knew. Mm-hmm. It was took me a second to go, is this really happening?
Yeah.
And it's just great. I mean, all the interviews with him, and I've seen some different little tidbits out there where he's talking about how awesome this is, how inclusive this is, how cool it is. And yeah, it's just been really, really neat, I guess, to see him that role.
I just went to the shot where he's getting away with Grogu in that. I mean, it really looks like Hagrid and Harry in the flying motorcycle.
Oh, yeah.
But in the background, you see the temple burning.
Yes, you do.
The Jedi temple in flames. And then the next shot, it's just Coruscant. And I thought, all these vehicles, they're just going their way. Mm-hmm. Genocide happening in that city right now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And all of them, they're just going.
Yeah, Coruscant's just going about its business, trying to figure out, like, there's an attack happening. Okay, let's get away from that sector. Let's take the long way home, essentially.
Crazy.
And they kind of allude to that in the last episode where people from Coruscant are sort of like, Empire, Republic, New Republic, Jedi, whatever. Yeah. I mean, it's just another group in here.
Yeah.
And they just go about their business.
Yeah.
Which is kind of crazy. But, yeah, he shows up. Now, Kelleran Beck, getting used to the name here, has a really cool robe. He's actually got these like glyphs or whatever, like in the robe and everything. It just looks freaking awesome. I believe so. He uses two lightsabers, some Jarkai.
Yeah.
But he definitely has, when he shows up, he has a green lightsaber and then he picks up the blue.
The blue, yeah.
Yeah, which had fallen. So I just want to make that clear. Looks like he's a green lightsaber user. And yeah, he knows where he's going to. He knows that there's an exit plan.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, he turns around and just the look on his face.
Yeah.
He is upset. He is not having this, and he's deflecting these bolts right back at the clone troopers.
Yeah.
And force pushes one off, and it's awesome.
I think they did that really, really well, that in the last episode where we were with Dr. Pershing and Alaya.
Yeah.
They showed the same places they went to. So the train station and the
plaza
with the mountain.
With the mountain peak. Yeah.
Same places where they went, where Grogu went on his escape.
Yeah. You're fine. Yeah. It built in some continuity between the episodes and you got to see these different places. I don't know if I mentioned it last episode or not, but I believe the space opera place where Dr. Pershing speaks last episode is the same spot that Anakin and Palpatine will have their conversation about Darth Plagueis. And I also explained to Lottie, just as we were breaking down some of the Easter eggs, so going back to that episode real quickly, every time that Elia is on screen and there's this dark, ominous music playing underneath her, and it is the same music that is there at the space opera. It is like this long sort of tone that if you play both of those scenes, you'll hear it. You'll know what I'm talking about. And I was
very
like, whoa.
Interesting. Yeah.
So they're doing that. I mean, that when the music is matching up and you're in that location and you're using that to kind of signal that, hey, she might not be someone we can trust, is pretty wild. It was just it was really cool. But this is a long, exit here. And I was like, where is he going to go? How does he get away?
Yep.
The whole way, I'm just thinking, like, this is not what I expected at all. There was tons of theories out there that other people that we've seen in Clone Wars were going to save Grogu. So you have, like, one of the most important Star Wars characters, Baby Yoda, Grogu, who has changed Star Wars, is, like, the face of Star Wars. Mm-hmm. And now you have Kelleran Beck back, and he is the one who saves Grogu. Which is wild. So what do you think? Why do you think that Grogu is this important? Or was it just that he happened to be in that one particular spot? Like, let's just ask the question. Do you think that Yaddle and Yoda
had a baby?
Had a child.
I mean, we talked about that. They are the only individuals of that species that we know of, right?
Right.
So yes, it's definitely possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we looked at the timeline.
Right. We know now Yaddle was killed.
Right.
By
Count Dooku.
Count Dooku, right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that was less than 50 years ago. So Yoda definitely could have been around. But why would they keep it a secret? Why would that be not known?
They might have known. I mean, like, it might have just been known in the temple, but not explained to us. See, some of the things that we have to remember are that we don't know absolutely everything, the day in, like the ins and outs, right? So with the Mandalorian culture, we're learning in this episode that, oh, hey, if you're the leader of the war party, you can sit by the fire. The honor is yours.
Yeah.
We didn't know that before. So the same thing goes with, as we learn about Yoda's backstory, or we learn about Grogu's backstory. We didn't know he was saved by this guy.
Yeah.
We also didn't know that Yoda was his daddy.
Yeah.
That never came up. There was no reason to ever talk about Yoda's children.
Yeah.
So it's possible.
I know, it's possible. But I think,
you don't think
I think I would be a little disappointed then that Yoda, in the last minutes of his life,
wasn't checking for his
Luke. He wasn't really. I mean, maybe like he was thinking about him, but like, there's no hint whatsoever that there's anything like that out there. So
that's true. That's true. See, I it could be Yaddle's son.
Yeah.
And that would be interesting.
Yeah.
That his mother was a great warrior.
Because we don't know as much about her, if she could have had a
child.
Yep. And I do think, back to your question, I do think that he is of importance because not only is he protected by so many Jedi, he is also hunted by so many. Like, when you see
Master Kelleran?
Master
Kelleran?
Kelleran.
Yeah.
Yes.
The
guy who saves him.
Or Master Beck.
Yeah.
Is it good? Beck. Yeah.
Okay. There we go. Master Beck.
Master Beck. Yeah. It's easier.
So when he saves him and he's trying to escape with him on that other ship, there is stormtroopers on the, or not stormtroopers.
Clone troopers.
Clone
troopers
on the platform.
Right.
Lots of them. And then while they're trying to get away, there's more ships coming in trying to get them. And it's like, they all know they're there and they're focusing. I mean, this is Order 66. There's so many Jedi that they need to eliminate, right?
Right.
It seems like a lot of them are focused on Grogu.
Yeah.
So that's why it makes me think like he's very extra special, important.
Yeah, it does, for sure.
Yeah.
No, I feel like there's something extra here. Again, it could just be that Kelleran was in charge of getting younglings out as fast as possible and had connections and was using those to get people out, that the fighting broke out and that was immediately his response and people, like a message goes out and then he's just, all the Jedi know, get the younglings to Kelleran back. And, and here we go. I also think there's something extra special because he and Anakin are born the same year. The Chosen One, Anakin Skywalker and Grogu, born
same time.
Yeah. I think they're the exact same day, same age. Pretty sure. Could be wrong, but I thought they were. That was like when this all came out and people were trying to figure out how old Grogu was, and they said that he was 50 years old. People like tracked it back and like that's the same year Anakin was born.
Wow.
I think I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure. Anyway, So just there's something. There is something special, and there's something probably special about Yoda's species as well. They live super long.
Yeah.
Preserving the order, knowing that this individual is not going, it's going to be maybe 100 years before he's ready to really be in true combat or to really be mature and ready to reforge the Jedi Order. But I kind of think Grogu is the future of Star Wars in general. He's just sort of, even 30 years from now, he'd be 80, getting closer to 100, and he could be the Jedi Master that leads the Order beyond Rey, you know, beyond Rey Skywalker. Like, he could be someone way down the line who was trained by Master Skywalker, trained by Luke Skywalker, also raised by Mandalorians. He was there. Think of how far back he goes, right? He's born the same year as, look at the names, Anakin Skywalker. He's raised in the temple with all these Jedi who protect him, who take care of him. He has this history. He knows them. He knows Master Yoda, Yaddle, he knows all these individuals in the Clone Wars. He experienced that. He experienced Order 66. Now he's experiencing the Imperial Remnant. He probably will live, I guarantee you, he lives beyond all of this stuff that is happening in the sequels.
Yeah.
And Ezra Bridger in his order that's coming up, I kind of feel like he's going to experience, I think there's another, I don't know.
That would be so epic.
Can I just tell you something real quick?
Yes,
if
please.
I were in charge of Star Wars, can I tell you what I would do?
Yes, let me know.
Because this is ridiculous. Like, Luke Skywalker, I saw somewhere on Twitter somewhere that Dave Filoni kind of said that Luke Skywalker may not be a Jedi, like a true Jedi following the Jedi way. I don't know what that was all about. But anyways, it made me think of something though. Regardless, he's a Jedi. He's doing his thing. He'll become Master Skywalker and he'll train Rey. But his order is, he was kind of continuing, it seems like in the sequels, what Luke does is try to continue the old way of the Jedi. Okay?
Yeah.
Like, he tries to continue on with what Yoda and everyone else, you know, did. Mm-hmm. One of the coolest things that happens in Legends is that Luke actually, instead of continuing on the old Jedi way, he creates the new Jedi mm-hmm. way. It's the new Jedi Order. And I'm saying way now because of this is the way. You know what I mean? Like, sorry. But you know, it's the new Jedi Order. And there's different rules. They're allowed attachments. They're having children. Like, the bloodlines are allowed to sort of move forward. Not all of them do, but some of them do, and it's okay. And I don't have all the clarity on that, but I just sort of think that Ezra Bridger, if he comes in and he does set up a new order, a new way to counteract what's going on with Thrawn out in the separate from Master Skywalker,
mm-hmm.
it's a huge galaxy.
Yeah,
it could be something totally different. They could even call it the Order of Bendu or whatever they want. They can call it something different because Kanan had this experience with the Bendu,
yeah.
right? With Bendu. Yeah. And so Ezra did as well. They're different. They're this off branch. I mean, Kanan has a son that I believe Jason Syndulla will be trained by Ezra Bridger. I kind of think that Grogu may walk his own path in the way of the Mandalore for a while.
Yeah.
And he then may find this other order. And maybe they'll do something with Rey down the line. I'm not sure. But if mm-hmm. it were me, I would set up something epic with Ezra Bridger. I really would. And I would do what you didn't do. Like, I would make more connections to Legends. I would do things on a grander scale. Bring back the Force. Bring back more Jedi. The idea that after 30 years, after Luke has had all this time, that he's still the only one left is just sad.
Yeah.
You know, and that Rey's the only one that's there, and then it's these two battling it out. It just feels really, it just feels like the Order never came back. It feels like nothing ever happened. And so where does it all go? Anyway, I just think they need to correct that a little bit, and there's other things that could be happening in the galaxy while all this stuff is, you know, did happen with the First Order and everything else. There are other priorities that could be center for other people like Thrawn and the Chiss Ascendancy. They could literally, here's something they could do. They could literally leave the galaxy, Ezra Bridger, all these different, Ahsoka, all these other big players. They could go and have this whole sort of chapter where they're in the Chiss Ascendancy doing war, doing whatever. They come back to the galaxy, realize Rey Skywalker then tells them what happened while they all were gone and they were all fighting in the unknown regions or the beyond or whatever they're going to call it.
Yeah.
But they come back to the galaxy and realize, holy smokes, like that happened.
Mm-hmm.
And they beat Palpatine again. Okay, cool. And we just sort of move on. But I would almost like kind of, I don't know, circumvent is the word, but like just work your way around what happened in the sequels.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, they are adding to it because all this stuff with cloning, Grogu, the cloning technology from Kamino, Mount Tantus, all of it is building towards Thrawn, the Imperial Remnant, resurrecting Palpatine, bringing back the Empire.
Right.
But for what? Is it just to rule? They think it's a better order than the New Republic, or is there a greater threat out there? Lots of questions to still answer. Mm-hmm. But I would really get a grasp on where they're going to go with all of this. I know they want to tie it into the sequels, but they have to be thinking beyond that.
Yeah.
Like, to stretch the Star Wars timeline is I think, the biggest thing that they can do, really. Yeah. So, sorry.
I think you're right. They're setting us up. It feels like they're setting us up for something like that with the open ending of Rebels. Ezra Bridger is out there. Sabine is going to go find him. Sabine herself is a Mandalorian. We're watching the Mandalorian right now. We have Ahsoka out there too, who is guiding Sabine to Ezra. So, and we get more about that hopefully in the Ahsoka series. So I think this year we're going to get a lot. And I really would be disappointed if they don't follow up on all that build up.
And
really make something good, great, grand out of that.
and two things. I mean, so it can also be that everything that's happening now, I've said this a lot, but at the end of episode 6, when you go from episode 6 to episode 7, there's 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
30 years, right? So all of episodes 4, 5, and 6 took place in a matter of like 2 to 3 years.
Yeah.
Like 2 to 3 years where they showed you the end of this great Rebel Alliance and this battle that took place. And then you go back, let's see, in episode 1, I'm trying to think what the timeline is there between episode 1, 2, and 3. Anakin is a young boy. What is he? Is 9, 10 years old, grows up. I mean, it's not a lot of time.
Yeah.
And so I feel like you can show so much in a short amount of time here. Like, give them 10 years to build to some great real battle between the New Republic and Thrawn's Imperial Remnant. And yeah. what were they trying to do? But there's also splinter factions that are trying to bring back Emperor Palpatine. But maybe that's not really Thrawn's true agenda. You can do all of those things within this next 30 years and make right. it fit, make it work. And they should do that. But then they should set up things here that will connect to Rey's story moving forward.
Yeah.
And Daisy Ridley, I'm sure she'll come back and they'll do some stuff. But they need to set up an epic story moving forward with Grogu, with someone that we love, that we care about, that we're like, yeah. oh, this worked really well. Yeah. It worked well with kids. It was a good story. There's good storytelling, and they're doing that. Like Dave Filoni, Jon Favreau, all the people that they're bringing, the creatives that they're bringing in, are telling interconnected story that yeah. makes sense, even if it's cheesy and corny sometimes, because there are moments where this is like really kind of corny.
Yeah.
It's for kids.
Yeah.
It's meant for kids, and it's about the light versus dark. It's about mm-hmm. good versus evil, and they're capturing that.
And
so.
You said they're currently talking to Daisy about
more
stuff.
Well, it's speculated. She showed up for a lunch mm-hmm. at Lucasfilm. Mm-hmm. Why?
Yeah.
Just to say hello? I mean, just to, hey, come on over. I want to chat. What's up? Like, no. I mean, she said, I forget what she said it was or whatever, but everyone's like, come on. They yeah. know what they're doing, and they are set.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Setting up something with yeah. her. I just have a feeling.
Okay.
They needed to let it breathe. They need mm-hmm. to figure it out. They need to work through all the pieces and have a cohesive story come together. And there's big talk that Kathleen Kennedy is pushing, like, their next week, apparently they are announcing, this is during Star Wars Celebration, they're announcing the next movies or the next trilogy of movies in Star Wars. Yes. Like big,
we have nothing big. Planned, right?
We got nothing planned.
Okay, good.
And it is going to be a massive announcement. So I'm excited because that's going to be a Star Wars Celebration. They're announcing, obviously, the trailer for Ahsoka will be out. There will be tons of Star Wars news coming. There's, trying to think, all these other little TV shows that we have. The Acolyte is going to be coming out. We'll get a trailer or something, maybe a promo for that. We'll learn more about Cal Kestis. Mm-hmm. And I need to play that in front of Lottie. I showed you the... remember that video game I was watching in Cal Kestis was...
Fallen Order?
No, Fallen Order. Fallen Order, exactly. So this would be Jedi Survivor. This is mm-hmm. going to be Star Wars Jedi Survivor. So it's him, I think, 5 years later, I'm pretty sure.
Cool.
It's around the same time as Obi-Wan Kenobi in that series. So people are hoping to get some cool story elements from mm-hmm. that are going to tie in. Because people keep thinking Cal Kestis is going to step into, like, Andor. Or he's going to step into... Like, some people thought Cal Kestis was going to be the guy who actually... You know, saved, and I didn't think so because he's too. Mm-hmm. He himself is actually running from Order 66, and yeah. he was not. You know, but some people were saying, well, could he have been the guy who saves, you know, Grogu? No, and I'm glad they didn't do anything like that because yes.
Yeah. Sorry, just now that we've seen where we don't really know where Grogu goes after that, right?
Mm-mm.
So, do you think he could still end up somehow on Mount Tantus?
Mount Tantus.
Be...
Oh boy, that's a great question, because at some point, it feels like Dr. Pershing and his people have had access to him, right?
Okay, makes you think that?
No, that's in Mandalorian Season 1. Remember? Oh, remember when
that's
they...
That's right, yes. Yeah, that's where he showed up the first time, Dr. Pershing. Yeah.
Right,
yes,
but it feels like, so it's very hard to some people would say, well, no, they were just trying to get Grogu. No, they needed Grogu back.
Okay.
It feels like Grogu somehow got away from them.
Yeah.
Or some Nikto gang of pirates took him and they are trying to reacquire him. That's why they're hiring bounty hunters to go get him.
Yeah.
Or it's just that he's been out there on the loose, possibly, and they just wanted to gain access to his DNA so that Dr. Pershing can make a strand cast, as he talked about here, from him, and use that DNA to help create a body that would be on essentially Snoke. Snoke is one of the things that Palpatine and his dark acolytes were trying to create to a body, an essence that like Palpatine could download himself.
His consciousness or whatever.
Right. He could do transfer his essence into that individual. So Grogu is a part of that, studying his genetics and his DNA and creating something from him, or using something there to understand aging and how Yoda's species lives so long is helping them to create some secret project. And that, by the way, Eliah Kane, who we saw last episode, every single time Palpatine, that ominous Darth Plagueis like tone, undertone is being played with her. It's a very Sith-like music that is playing. And she seemingly, I think people think Moff Gideon's the big bad guy, and they're wrong. And if I'm wrong, you come back here and you let me know, okay? But I think she's working for an even more sinister group. Like, everyone offs themselves when Gideon seems to say so, but I kind of think Gideon is working for something even higher than himself, and it might be directly related to Palpatine.
I would love for you to be right, and I'm eating my microphone here, sorry.
Please, just chomp down on it. But I would love for me to be right, too. You know, I mean, I don't know though. Like, I love being surprised. I just think that he is, the way I see the Imperial Remnant is splintered and fractured.
Yeah.
You know, different groups. Supposedly, they've already surrendered, but there's a group of holdouts here, and they are like the Empire itself at large has surrendered, and they've signed some peace treaty there on Coruscant, and some of them are turning themselves in, and they're being, or they've been captured or whatever. They're decommissioning their fleet and all this stuff.
Yeah.
But Gideon is working on, and it's weird because Palpatine wanted the Empire to go through Operation Cinder and be burnt down. He creates, then he sets up, burn down the Empire, create the First Order, but then behind the First Order, he creates this Sith Eternal fleet. You see how complicated that is? So it's like he enacts, once he dies, he enacts this other contingency plan, which will burn down the First Order, will burn down the Empire, but from the Empire there's an Imperial Remnant.
Yeah.
Not all of them were destroyed, and some of them were holding out. But then Palpatine wants there to be a First Order, which is this new order that he is that's working, and it's going to be, you know, whatever. It develops from his most trusted, devout, loyal people. But then there's a secret group behind that. So that's why people have some trouble with the sequel sometimes, is that like, what? It doesn't seem like, there's all these secrets behind secrets, and it seems like too many secret doors, you know? So, because now they have to make all that make sense.
Yeah.
Who's working for who? Like, is Gideon working for, so I've seen First Order, but yet under the guise of Imperials? Or is it like Thrawn, who was gone and came back and is getting the entire Empire back together? That's what I think, is that Thrawn has come back as the last Grand Admiral, and he is gathering the Imperial Remnant.
Hang on a second, though. Yes. If Thrawn is back, he was with Ezra last. So we need, if Thrawn can come back, then probably Ezra is back somewhere too.
Somewhere, yes.
Right.
Yeah, they're hunting Thrawn. Ahsoka showed us that when she fought Morgan Elsbeth, that she is seeking Thrawn, who she knows is active. And that she says, "Where is your master, Thrawn?" Meaning that whatever operation Morgan Elsbeth was in charge of and was actively doing was under the direction of Thrawn. So that tells you Thrawn is active. And they said it in this episode or the last episode. They said that these were too many TIE interceptors, too many just like, what do they call it? I forget what they said, but it almost implied that there was a greater fleet out there that they didn't know about.
When they destroyed Bo-Katan's home.
Yes, when they bombed it, So, and I forget the exact phrasing on that, but that was kind of important last episode to note that there's a bigger group out there. So if it's, and it whatever they, I forget the wording, but the way they describe bigger than blank, well, that blank is Moff Gideon. Bigger than this person. Like, clearly too many interceptors for there to just be. So which means Thrawn, which means someone like Thrawn, like a Grand Admiral who came in and is getting everybody sort of ready to go, which would make a lot of sense because Palpatine wanted the Empire to be shut down.
Yeah.
He wanted the old Empire to go away, the First Order to come back, and then the Sith Eternal fleet that he's working on out on Exegol showing up again. Now, Thrawn had different motives. He was working to, you know, be a part of the Empire, trying to convince Emperor Palpatine to, for the TIE Defender project. He wanted a greater fleet, a big fleet that could patrol the galaxy, not the Death Star, not some super weapon.
Right.
I believe Thrawn was preparing for a threat against that entire galaxy. There is another galaxy that I believe he thinks is threatening and will come into their galaxy, into this known galaxy. Yeah. It felt like in the unknown region there was, whether that could still be a part of this galaxy, I guess, right? But in the unknown region, it feels like Thrawn is and his people are facing a threat that is extremely great. And all Thrawn cares about at the end of the day is protecting the Chiss Ascendancy. He may seem like he is a diehard Imperial right now, but that is all so that he can protect the Chiss Ascendancy. So his greater goal is to, even if he has to ally himself with some evil people like Darth Vader and Emperor Palpatine, he wants them prepared to face what he believes is an even greater threat. Or learn from them.
Okay.
Possibly find some allies or something and find some resources, some technology.
Yeah.
Learn about, you know, the Empire and then make it ready for whatever attack might happen with the Chiss Ascendancy. So when you read the Thrawn books and you read his backstory, that's very much what he is. So people even say, too, that the Thrawn books are different than the Thrawn we see in Rebels, and that very well may be. Maybe Thrawn does get he does get caught up in the beliefs of the Empire and all that kind of stuff, perhaps. But I think he's going to come back and he realizes the strength in this unit and in this force, and he is going to try to use his position as an authority figure, as Grand Admiral, to come back in and create what he believes is a better version of the Empire.
Okay.
Yeah, he will be the head of this new Empire, and he's in. I mean, I forget how many. I think 13. Is it 13 Grand Admirals? Look up. Type in.
Not many.
How many Grand Admirals were there? And anyways, so when he steps back on stage, one of the things the Alphabet Squadron books have been trying to do is talk about who should be in control. Which of these admirals, or are there any great admirals?
12.
Grand 12 Grand Admirals.
Appointed
Thank you.
Unexpectedly by Emperor Palpatine
himself. They're directly appointed. Yeah.
At the New Year something week celebrations of 2BBY, the 12 Grand Admirals were the most senior officers of the Imperial Navy and answered directly to the Emperor.
Right. They knew a lot of secrets. And so what Thrawn knew in Heir to the Empire was he knew a lot of the Emperor's secret storehouses, secret projects, rumors. They're high up there. They have the most intel, most knowledge, most access to other secret things. Mm-hmm. You had people like Mara Jade who worked as the Emperor's hand, like their like his personal sort of I don't know, like go-betweens. Like they would negotiate or work on his behalf, and sometimes would even work directly with Grand Admirals. Yeah. So it's kind of a big deal. That hierarchy is important to keep in mind as he steps back into the stage.
Yeah.
And that's why I think someone like Elia Kane, like when they know a Grand Admiral has come back and is going to unify them, if you believe in the Empire, you will get behind that Grand Admiral. And everything we know about Thrawn is that his unit, the people who work for him, they appreciate and admire him, even though the Empire was largely anti-alien. He happens to be very efficient, very good, and smart. Yeah. So we'll see. Holy Moses. Anyway, just some Thrawn stuff, and you know,
I mean,
but we're step by step. Yeah. We're gonna get there, you know.
You were talking about different splinter groups basically in the Empire, right?
Yeah,
and talking about splinter groups, I want to make the cut back to the episode.
Yeah.
We are still, there's still so many Mandalorian groups out there, right? They're also kind of splintered. What do you think going forward? So how did you like Bo-Katan in this episode? And still, what do you think her,
how's she
where's
feeling?
Where's her way?
Kind of go. Where's her allegiance right now, sort of, right? And which way do you think she's going to go?
Yeah.
I think she's impressed. I think that this is growing on her. Just like for us, the viewer, the way has been a little, as Han Solo would say in episode 4, a little hokey. Like a hokey religion that you're sort of like a cult. What?
Yeah.
Come on, you can't take your helmet. This is kind of strange, right? But the more you learn about it, the more respect and honor and the honor tradition and their code, it's impressive. And it's inspiring other people, and it's inspiring even Bo-Katan to go, okay, these people respect this.
Yeah.
It's not one person. That's the thing, is that this is the way, meaning that, like, it's not like we're following one individual. This is the creed.
Yeah.
This is our belief system. It's not just this president or this leader or this emperor or this ruler of Mandalore. She's always trying to be the ruler of Mandalore.
Mm-hmm.
All right, fine. But that ruler leads not through the Darksaber, but through the way.
Yeah.
Right? And that, I mean, it's said multiple times in this episode that the Mythosaur, right? When you've seen the ancient Mythosaur, that's a lucky thing. That's a good thing that can open your eyes to other things. And there's a mystical power behind all of that. And when she pours when she poured the living waters into the little, I don't know what it is, like her forge area,
yeah,
it was magical. Magical waters.
Yes.
So there's something real to it. Yeah. And she knows this. And they, I'm just so curious as to who she is. And
do you think she's grown up on Mandalore? And
yeah, it won't. I think they'll just, I'm not sure. It definitely can't be any of the theories now that we've suggested, which were like Bo-Katan's sister, who was the mother of Corki Kree's and would be like, you know, Satine's sister as well. So people thought there was three Kree sisters and this was one of them.
Yeah.
Clearly they don't really know each other, or they've not acknowledged that they know each other. Now that's the other thing too, is like, we got, even from Paz Vizsla, we had no idea that was his son. The child. Save the child.
Yeah.
But so, and you're like, okay, that's his son. Yeah. But they saved that reveal for later. So it could be that these two are secretly hiding their suspicions of one another, that they may suspect.
Maybe, yeah.
Maybe the emperor, or I'm sorry, the emperor, the armorer is trying to hide her identity and has kept it hidden. But her voice, you would think, would be recognizable.
Right, yeah.
Right? You would recognize that voice. And maybe Bo-Katan does. I don't know. I think it's a huge mystery, and I have literally no clue anymore as to who it could be. It's just going to be some made-up character, and they may just always keep the armorer a mystery.
Yeah.
Really. They might actually just keep her as the armorer, and that's it.
Yep.
Flat out. So there is no backstory.
Just like they keep Yoda's species kind of a mystery.
Yes. Yep. Never tell it. Never keep a mystery box there, and never. Which, again, if Bo-Katan doesn't know who this is and is just finding their leader, who like is more of a spiritual guide, like a leader in terms of like, this is the way, this is the creed, and they turn to her for knowledge and advice. She's more of an advisor and not necessarily their leader.
Yeah.
And one of them emerges as a leader. That's kind of cool. And then who is this sort of mystical guide, the armorer?
Yeah.
No one knows. I don't know. We'll see. Yeah. Great question, though, because I think she is more and more starting to identify with this group and seeing that this covert is, they're together and they're united in their beliefs and their goals.
Yeah.
Whereas her people are fractured, following the person who's the strongest, who has the best, who can wield the saber, who was given the saber and shouldn't have been, and blah, 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 whatever.
Yeah.
Like, it's, she basically said, like, they'll follow anybody who waves that saber around, right? Yeah. Anybody who waves the dark saber around, they will follow. Like, they don't have a good foundation. They're really just whimsical, can be pulled this way, pulled that way. Whereas these individuals are not. Din and this covert, they are not just swayed one way or the other. No. They are rigidly following the way.
Yeah.
So.
And I think Bo just, she's learning so much right now. She's lost her way. When we see her just lingering around when Din shows up, she doesn't know what to do with herself right now.
That's true. Yeah.
So she's learning a lot. And just like the armor says to Grogu earlier, how much the armor means to a Mandalorian. That's their identity. That's the trials they face, which goes into their armor. You know,
yeah,
like that's part of their identity. And we see how the mythosaur becomes part of Bo's identity in this episode, because she's seen it. Now it's part of her. It's part of her trial. It's part of her journey.
Yes. Yeah, for sure.
So it's really cool that they showed.
Well, and it's that her story arc is someone who has heard about, like, she grew up. It's almost like you're a kid who grew up in church. You're like, yeah, okay, sure. Angels, demon, whatever. And then you're out and about and you're like, you one day come across like this, you have this experience where you're like, oh, maybe they were right about something. And I'm not trying to make a direct connection to our religions or faith, but it's something like that where you're told these, I mean, it's Santa Claus. We go as simple as Santa Claus. You're told about Santa Claus and you'd be like, yeah, I kind of went through the motions as a kid and I believed in Santa for a while, but now I'm grown up. And now, as a grown up, she's sort of like, I just saw Santa.
Yeah, like, something like that. Yeah.
You know,
or at least it unites those people. You know, their beliefs unite them. They give them direction.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, she even if she doesn't really adopt 100% of their belief system, she learns a lot about being a leader. And we see her in a leading role again in this episode where she leads the hunt for the raptors and saving the child.
Save the child. because she is the war party leader, which we learn, hey, if you're the war party leader, you have the honor of sitting by the fire.
Yep.
Amazing. How amazing is that? So little things like that keep popping up that we learn more and more about the way, and it's great. Yep. This was just a go rescue a foundling episode. I mean, it was like Grogu is rescued, and then Ragnar is rescued, and they fought each other, and they probably will grow up together, and be, you know, maybe friends and go through trials and stuff together, which is a cool story. Like the way they're putting this together more and more and more, I'm starting to see what they're trying to do with Grogu and Mandalore and bringing it back and making it a huge point in the galaxy. Like if you can get a united Mandalore, they were one of the most, because Satine during the Clone Wars chose not to be impartial, essentially. Like, I'm not going to join one side or the other. We're going to be very neutral in all of this. Mm-hmm. And she had abandoned the warlike mentality that they had had in the past. Now, if they were fully operational, if you will, and there was a fully operational Mandalore, they themselves could have challenged the Emperor. Like, that's sort of why they're destroyed. That's why, like, they are a big deal. Back in the day, there was what were called like the Mandalorian Wars. It was the Jedi versus the Mandalorian, and they had this massive battle and fight. So that's something in Legends. So they're kind of a big deal. And if you could get them together, if you can keep them fractured, then they're not a threat. But if they come together, they're a big force in the galaxy.
Yeah,
big time. And the other thing that's happening now, subtly underneath all of this, is that the New Republic is decommissioning all of the old Alliance ships and all of the Imperial fleet. They are trying to go to a system where there are not it's almost like there's a lot of nuclear weapons in the galaxy and they're destroying all of them. They're saying, okay, we're going to take this all back a notch. We're going to destroy their weapons and our weapons and everyone else's weapons. Well, now if Mandalore comes along and says, we got this massive weapon and we are now united, they didn't see that coming. It's like, oh shoot, they're just as powerful as anybody. They're just as powerful. So who knows? We only see a small covert right here.
Right.
And I know it seems like on a pretty small scale, but that's not what Mandalore was. And I know that they're scattered and they're a broken people, but they could come back in the thousands and maybe millions. So,
I mean, hopefully that's what they're going after, because the whole show is called The Mandalorian. So hopefully we get that. I feel like that's what Bo has to go through. Like, how do I unify
my
people.
The people for sure. I think they're going to, and I think we ask even Michaela, like, is it going towards we go back to Mandalore, we reclaim it? And that is that does seem, maybe even Meg before that said the same thing, everyone seems like we're in agreement that we are going to go back there and reclaim it. There may be a Mandalorian war, but these guys will come out triumphant, and this is the way. The other groups and clans will submit to these individuals, because if they win, that is, right? If they win in that regard,
Okay, can I ask one more question?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Have you ever seen the armor herself fight in a fight? Did she ever fight?
Yes. One time she does, okay. And it's in season one, and she fights against a bunch of stormtroopers who are running down after she tries to, like, Din is down there with IG-11, the child. They're all trying to get out, and she says, go, I will buy you some time.
Okay.
Right? Like, save the foundling. This is the way. Mm-hmm. That is, and so she says right here, you have honored your house and all of Mandalore. And how did she do that? You have done the highest honor of the creed. You've saved a foundling. That's what Din did. He saved a foundling as well. And then in the first season. So she has great respect for that. She was willing to die and buy him time. We actually weren't sure if she lived during that whole thing, but she put a few of them stormtroopers down. She waited for them to walk in. And they had their guns trained on her, and she was like, I don't think so.
Wow. I was just wondering, because they have these little antennas, most of them, attached to the helmet, right? Those are range finders. I just Googled that.
Yeah.
And I was wondering, she doesn't have one of those, so I was wondering if she ever really fights. She seems more of a she creates armor, right? That's her role. She's not really the one that goes out and fights.
Right. It's the same sort of thing that, like, I liken her a little bit unto Obi-Wan. And people are like, oh, what are you talking about? Mm-hmm. But Obi-Wan doesn't have blasters and fancy stuff. Mm-hmm. He might have a sword at his side, and you don't quite think he's that much of a threat.
Right.
He doesn't have all the tech and the gear. She's not wearing all these other things.
Yeah, her armor looks very simple.
Mm-hmm. Very simple, very old, very older style. Mm-hmm. She is an advisor. She is a guide.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's and in a way, right now, she's a temporary leader for them, but she is, they're seeking a leader. A leader will rise through their ranks, and that will be who they follow.
Yeah.
But until then, she is just a guide, and she's teaching about the way, and she's a spiritual sort of advisor.
Yeah.
So, but she's dangerous.
Oh, yeah.
She's dangerous, so don't mess with her. But you're right. It's totally her makeup or her costuming is very different from the other Mandalorians, which is really important.
Yeah.
So she's even wearing some like a hide or like a fur on her shoulders, and that's probably from some.
It stands out. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. Some beast that she killed or something. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Who knows? Yeah. We don't know anything about her backstory, and she is one of the biggest mysteries in the Mandalorian still, and probably they got to keep that running for a long time.
Yeah.
So because I mean, when she pours the living waters in there, she knows right away. Absolutely. Right.
Yeah.
You did go there.
Yep.
And you're like, okay, she knows. What does she know and not know? It is just fascinating.
By the way, it's so much fun to I can just throw questions at you. Like, do you know that the armor ever fight? And you're like, yeah, absolutely. I remember when she, you know, protected them. And bought them time. And I was like, this is so cool. You just know so much. And it's
just a lot.
Fun, too.
Well, thank you. Dankeschön.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's a lot to. So I don't know all the exact specifics. You know, sometimes I'm wanting, like, what I can quote a lot of is like episode 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6, you know, and I can quote some Rebels and quote some of those other major things. And I know some of the legends and lore and stuff, but to keep it all, I mean, it's so vast. It's over 40 years.
I know.
Over 40 years of material
that
has dropped. So for any one person to know it all is sort of crazy. But I do obsess over it. You are right about that. I even said today, we were like rewatched those episodes, and I was like, I just kind of want to rewatch them.
Yeah.
So we're on spring break, so we had a chance to sit down and rewatch all the the episodes, and it's great. Yeah,
that's great.
It's freaking great.
Yeah. By the way, if you just randomly throwing that out here, if you feel like you're craving something sweet,
oh please,
throw together a mashed banana.
This is your treat for the end of the episode, friends.
Just mash up a banana, put like about, I don't know, two tablespoons of peanut butter in there and some cocoa powder. Mash that all together. Like, it has to be a good, just one mass. And then put it in a container and in the freezer for however long you want. Really, we only put it in there for like maybe 45 minutes. But if you want like more of an ice cream consistency, keep it in there longer. And thank me later.
Thank us later. That was literally like you pulled that out at the end of our Mandalorian watching experience. And I was like, Yeah, I downed it right before the episode. That's probably why I'm so energetic right now. I also have like this big sugar. No, it's not really super. It's sweet, but it's just bananas.
Sweet, yeah. I mean, it's banana and a little bit of sweetener.
It's peanut butter. Oh my gosh, it's so good. But actually, speaking of that, so since we're on spring break, I'll be back later this week with my good friend Cameron. He's going to pop on the episode. We're going to watch the next Mandalorian episode. We're going to kind of do like some Bad Batch, maybe an episode or two. We'll kind of combine together. Mm-hmm. So we'll talk about the last episode when the new one comes out and talk about those two together. That's kind of what we've been doing just to get through because there's a lot happening and we're still running Shell Cottage Radio and Harry Potter Hangout. Go check all those things. We got big updates coming on those shows. But yeah, Cameron will be in. And then the following week, we'll have another Mandalorian episode followed by Star Wars Celebration. That will be huge. And anyone who is a patron, by the way, so all of our Jedi Masters out there, I'm going to be going live. I went live last year for that, and it was just fun just to sit there, and it's a hangout. It's straight up just a hangout where you guys can pop in.
We're
gonna and
make blue drinks.
Blue drinks. We're going to have some Star Wars snacks, and we'll have some Star Wars running. We'll have the live stream up, be watching live the updates. And it's literally, I'm not going to be sitting there trying to run a show. It's just, I'm sitting there for a long while. I might be staring at the screen, watching what you guys are watching and saying, you guys see that? Like, that's cool. So it's probably the most boring live stream ever. But
don't say that.
Well, it's just hanging out with people. Yeah. Right. And then when news happens and people break out, they like pop into YouTube and like, oh my God, did you guys see the thing or the trailer? And that's what that will be. So if you're interested in that, I'll send links to our patrons. You guys are more than welcome to pop on, pop in and out, stay as long as you want. I one time was on for like the max that YouTube would let me on. Like, stayed on as long as I could. So that'll be fun. It'll be next week. But all right, friends. Well, hey, thank you guys so much. Go try that dessert. Go back and rewatch Mandalorian episode 3 and 4 and let me know what you think. You got any, theories, thoughts on Elia Kane and Dr. Pershing? Why did she do that? That's still stumping me. And stuff with Thrawn. Anything you guys got, send it my way. Would appreciate it. So we did see last thing for you guys. If you stick around to the end of the episode, you might get like these extra little nuggets here, which is, remember we just watched that TikTok about about Elia being pregnant?
Yeah, because she touched her belly.
She touched her stomach 3 times, guys. So she's pregnant, and that's a theory floating around on TikTok. So go check that out. Anyway, all right, I'm done. Thank you guys so much. We appreciate you guys. You're wonderful, and thanks for listening. Please leave a review. Helps the podcast. Would appreciate that. Send your thoughts in. Would love to read some transmissions on the show if we get some of those. And again, come hang out with us next week. So with all of that, remember that this is the way.
Oh my goodness.
That's the first time we got it right. Hey friends, thanks for listening to this week's episode. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast, leave us that review, check out our extra episodes on Patreon and Apple Premium. This is the way.